Hello, political learners. Welcome to the Weekly Paul Show. My name is Tobias Sika. I'm a fourth-year Bishop's graduating student doing a double major in political science and German as a foreign language, and I will be your host for this show. This week, I have the great pleasure of interviewing Dr. Jacobs Robbins Cantor, Bishop's University's specialist in Canadian politics, on the English-French political and cultural divide in Canada. Jacob Robbins Cantor is an assistant professor in the Department of Politics and International Studies at Bishop's University. He received his PhD in 2021 from Queen's University after undergraduate studies at McGill. His research focuses on political parties, political communication, and representation. Dr. Robbins Cantor is also professeur-chercheur at the Groupe de Recherche en Communication Politique, headquartered at Université Laval, and research fellow at the Centre for the Study of Democracy and Diversity, headquartered at Queen's. He is author of the forthcoming book, Local Campaign Behavior in Canadian Elections, with the University of Toronto Press. Dr. Robbins Cantor, I am pleased to have you as my guest for this week.
Thank you for having me.
So current polls indicate that Pierre Poilievre, the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, the official opposition in the House of Commons, is set to make significant riding gains, especially in English Canada. Why is Pierre Poilievre polling well in English Canada, but has a harder time garnishing support in Quebec, particularly amongst Francophone voters?
That's a very good question, and I would put it in historical context. In fact, Pierre Poilievre is actually doing better in Quebec in the polls right now than most previous conservative leaders have done, with some minor exceptions. But historically, Quebec is the most difficult political terrain provincially for the Conservative Party, and it goes back to the conscription crisis of World War I, when the Conservatives were essentially in favor of conscription for Canadians to go fight in the First World War. And Francophone Quebecers were skeptical of this because it was seen as a war for the United Kingdom. And of course, they didn't identify as much with the UK as other English Canadians would have. So the Conservatives were sort of associated with this policy for many years going forward, and this hurt them in the province. There was a change in fortunes for the party after the Pierre Trudeau years, when Brian Mulroney did very well in Quebec in terms of his popularity. But after this time, it was quite difficult in the 90s and the 2000s for the party in Quebec. Quebec is, you could say, a more left of center or more progressive maybe political culture than other English Canadian provinces. So this has sometimes put the Conservative Party a little bit offside with mainstream public opinion in Quebec. And in recent elections, things like abortion and even same-sex marriage have been issues used against Conservative Party leaders in Quebec to sort of put them, to frame them as offside with mainstream Quebec opinion. Whereas Pierre Poilievre is doing a little bit better than the previous leader, Erin O'Toole, and Andrew Scheer before him were doing in opinion polls. But I think this is mostly just based on the fact that overall, the Trudeau Liberal government has become so unpopular that we're going to see some of that reflected in all provinces, including Quebec.
And on the counter side question, why has the Liberal Party of Canada historically been quite successful winning seats in Quebec?
Yeah, so the Liberal Party has historically associated itself more with Francophone Quebec and just, you could say, French Canada more generally. So the first Francophone Prime Minister, Wilfrid Laurier, was the Liberal Party was his political party. And on the sort of opposing side of the conscription crisis was a strong, at least, faction of the Liberal Party. And historically, the party was more, you could say, maybe in favor of French minority language rights, official bilingualism that's associated with the legacy of Pierre Trudeau as well. And the party historically has actually alternated between having one English-speaking leader and one French-speaking leader. So they've been careful to have that in the sort of DNA of how the party operates. And it's shown even in recent years with the popularity of Justin Trudeau in the province, where he's been able to maybe tap into some of that fact that the party has this sort of strong starting point in every election, which is their performance in Montreal, on the island of Montreal. And that strength looks like it's still there. Even today, if they were to lose a lot of seats, it looks like they would still keep this stronghold that they have on the island of Montreal. And then it's a matter of building on top of that. But their strength in Quebec comes in particular within the Anglophone community and the Allophone community. And it's looking quite a bit weaker with Francophone Quebecers these days.
Extrapolating from these two questions, we sometimes describe English and French Canada as the two solitudes. Is it really so? Are Anglophones and Francophones irreconcilable?
That's a good question, and I think it's difficult to answer. It depends who you ask, how we perceive the distance, the cultural, the political, the linguistic distance that exists between English and French Canada. It's certainly there. We can see it in, for example, the separate media ecosystems that exist. If you are in English Canada, you probably don't consume any French language media. And to a lesser extent, that might be true. If you're Francophone, you're not consuming a lot of at least English Canadian media. You might be hearing about what's going on in the United States, for example, as we tend to do a lot in this country. But so there is, to an extent, this separation. And sometimes we see it, for example, when there's a big, significant cultural moment in Quebec. Like I think of recently, the death of the lead singer of Les Cowboys Fringants, who was a huge figure in Quebec, and basically no one in English Canada knew who this was. And it just sort of was one of those instances that brings to light that, yeah, maybe there is this cultural distance between the two. But, you know, whether this is, as you asked, irreconcilable, I think there are still a lot of commonalities between Francophones and Anglophones, and there's a lot of sort of goodwill, I think, between the two groups these days. So it's not like there is a huge day-to-day tension, whether in the province of Quebec, where there's interaction between the two groups, or in the rest of Canada, where there's interaction. So I don't think there's a political tension in the way that there was, for example, in the 90s, or if we go back to the 80s and 70s and 60s, there's signs that the groups are living together pretty harmoniously, especially when we compare Canada and Quebec to other divided societies in the world, where we might say, wow, this really seems irreconcilable because there is so much conflict and even violence. We don't see that, and we don't see any signs that we're heading in that direction. And the even the Quebec sovereignty movement is not particularly high in public opinion polls right now. There is maybe talk that there could be a third referendum on Quebec independence, but it doesn't look like it's the majority public opinion now. So I'd say, yes, there is this cultural distance that continues, and that's just apparent to anyone who spend some time in Quebec and then spend some time in an English Canadian province. But also, I think it's maybe going too far to say that the differences or divisions are irreconcilable.
You are hearing the Weekly Poll Show with Tobias Sika. And this week, I'm interviewing Dr. Jacob Robbins Cantor on the English-French political and cultural divide in Canada. So this last question that we had ties a bit into the next one. Why do Thurian communities in English Canada have a hard time accepting French and the Francophone culture, in spite posing no threat to their cultural existence?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think if you were to ask people in Alberta or Newfoundland or somewhere about their one of these, you know, English-speaking provinces that's geographically and culturally distant from Quebec, which is basically all of them except for maybe Ontario and New Brunswick. I think the difficulty is that the French language doesn't have really any relevance to their day-to-day lives. They don't see it. They don't encounter it. So it feels maybe in some ways imposed on them in terms of we have official bilingualism and, you know, they see it on their cereal boxes and things like that. And it just feels that it's something that is coming from the federal government, from Ottawa, that just doesn't have relevance to them. And they don't see why, you know, it's not part of their day-to-day lives. So why is it getting so much attention and so much interest from the federal government and from the media? And so there's a little bit of resentment for that. Whereas in parts of the country where there is more of an understanding that having two official languages is just part of Canadian identity, I think there is maybe less of this this challenge. And that's something that's very difficult to address, right? If you live in the lower mainland of British Columbia, Cantonese and Mandarin are just very present there and very clearly relevant to people's day-to-day lives, or Punjabi in that same area. And it's just very difficult to, the French language just doesn't have the presence there that these other languages do. And so you sometimes see in public opinion polls, Canadians in those provinces saying that they are resentful towards bilingualism and that they, you know, they don't like how it's required for some jobs in the country, and they don't like that there's, you know, certain minority language rights for Francophone communities in their provinces. And I think that's something that's very difficult to address, unfortunately.
And what comparisons can be drawn about the political or demographic situation of Francophones in the rest of Canada versus Anglophones in Quebec?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. So there are, depends on the province, I suppose, that we're talking about, because obviously there's New Brunswick, which is the only officially bilingual province. And it has a French language minority that's quite large compared to in any other province. So I would say that if I had to characterize the situation of Francophones in the rest of Canada, in terms of linguistic vitality, like meaning, is the French language going to continue to be passed from generation to generation, it's fairly precarious in the rest of Canada. Like, that is to say, the number of Francophones in English Canada who have French as a mother tongue is declining year over year from generation to generation. There's just a tendency, you could say, a little bit towards at least assimilation in those provinces, with the exception maybe of New Brunswick. And, you know, there are parts of Eastern Ontario that are so geographically close to Quebec that maybe there's a little bit less of those tendencies. I would say that maybe there's not the same concern for Anglophones in Quebec in terms of assimilation. At least, you know, on the island of Montreal, there's a very strong presence of a historic Anglophone community that has institutions, universities, hospitals, schools, things like that, that are, you know, pillars of these communities that I don't know that you could say are necessarily there in the equivalent way for Francophones in English Canadian provinces. There's also, I guess, the reality that Anglophones in Quebec used to, you could say, have a more privileged position in the province. If you go back to the 1940s, 1950s, and until the 60s, where, you know, you still really needed English to get ahead in the province, and that situation now has changed. But there was this historic privilege that came from being Anglophone in the province. And that certainly wasn't the case at any point in the rest of Canada for Francophones. So there is that asymmetry as well, I would say.
Is the Quebec government rightful when it wishes to claim more power from the federal government? Or is this more Quebec horse trading to make political gains?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that if we ask, you know, does sometimes the Quebec government try to use Ottawa and the federal government as a convenient political adversary? I think the answer is yes, that if it's seen to be in the political interest of the government to be confrontational towards Ottawa, they will do that regardless of which political party is in power in Quebec City. But also, I do think it maybe depends a bit who you ask, if, you know, it's rightful to make these claims. I think that it's normal for a government to pursue the perceived interests of the population, especially when these demands are backed up by public opinion. Like, the population clearly wants the government to be making these claims. Should we really be surprised if, you know, the population of Quebec desires more control over immigration and the government of Quebec demands that Ottawa provide more control over immigration? That's not particularly surprising. So especially when the government can say, we would like these powers that other provinces don't have because we have challenges that other provinces don't have. And that's part of being an asymmetrical federation in this country, where different component parts of the country have different powers and responsibilities. And for Quebec, these mostly come from the fact that it's the only French language majority jurisdiction, and they are requesting these powers over something like immigration in order to try to deal with that that reality. So it's a difficult question to know sort of the motivations of the government at a particular time. But you can say historically, whoever has been in power, whether it's the Liberal Party of Quebec, the PQ, or now the CAQ, they've all basically demanded more autonomy and more power for Quebec. So it's not even really a partisan thing. It seems to be maybe reflecting the consensus that the majority public opinion of Quebecers is to want additional powers and autonomy, and the government is just reflecting that.
You are hearing the Weekly Pulse Show with Tobias Sika, and this week I'm interviewing Dr. Jacob Robbins Cantor on the English-French political and cultural divide in Canada. What could be done politically? What policies could be enacted by the provinces and the federal government to bridge the English-French cultural gap?
That's a difficult question to answer. Yeah, I think there's not a lot of political interest right now on the part of the provinces or the federal government in trying to bridge this political and cultural gap. If there was, that would also be difficult because there's no surefire solution that could bridge a cultural gap such as the one that we have here. It does kind of depend on the approach that you take. If you look at, again, other societies in the world that are linguistically and culturally divided, there are different opinions on how to manage that. But just broadly speaking, I would say the two main approaches. One would be to give each cultural group sort of its own autonomy and try to leave things alone and not sort of interfere with the affairs of another group, and to just sort of have this autonomy be part of how the political system operates. And the opposite way of dealing with that, which is sometimes favored, is to try to integrate the groups more closely and to actually try to bring them together and to have greater political, cultural, social, economic ties between them. And those are actually really opposing approaches, and none is really clearly the one that works best for bridging a gap, because sometimes you could say that, well, bringing groups in greater contact and having closer connections, that could also lead to conflict. It could bring up sort of sometimes there are incompatibilities in the political vision that each of those groups have, and that could cause more conflict. It could also cause the larger group to sort of dwarf the smaller group in terms of its political preferences, and or also culturally dwarf the smaller group. So it's not really clear one or the other is a good solution. One thing that might be helpful, though, is to maybe try to address some of the cultural distance by at least learning each other's language so we can speak to one another. And that's proved to be a difficult thing. There's a little bit more bilingualism in Quebec among Francophones who are able to speak English than there are among Anglophones in English Canada. But also that's, you know, it's very difficult if you're growing up in Western Canada and you have met these mandatory French classes. They're really not going to get you to where you need to be because, you know, we don't have the French teachers, frankly, for that or the resources to have a really good French language learning program. So I do suppose that if the government were to make an investment somewhere into bridging some of these divides that exist, having these resources for second language learning, whether it's English in Quebec or French in the rest of Canada, would be valuable. And also supporting minority language communities, so Francophones in the rest of Canada and Anglophones in Quebec, are also useful ways to manage this this divide.
Thank you very much, Dr. Robin Kanter, for being part of this interview. Would you like to add anything else?
No, I think we've covered a lot of ground, and thank you for having me today.
This is it, folks. I hope you appreciated my political podcast today, and I am looking forward to having you for next week's show. Next week, I will be interviewing another professor from the politics department, Dr. Heather McKean Edwards, on Canada's relation with the United Nations. If you have any questions or would like to submit ideas of topics to cover related to current political events, write to me at tsica20@ubishops.ca. That is tsica20@ubishops.ca.